Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to Cattlecast, Reader's Roundtable edition. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined around the mic by Cheryl Lindemann and Mari Garza. And we are your cattle selectors, so we order the majority of our materials for the Capillary District Library's collection. Hey, ladies, how's it going?
Good morning.
Pretty good.
Okay, good. So we kind of put this particular podcast together with the idea of kind of summer wrap up, and that means kind of different things to all of us. Summer is coming to an end way too quick for me.
Yeah.
Don't know about the rest of you. I had grand plans, and you know, life keeps getting in the way.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
One of the things I know happened for all of us is that I'm pretty sure we all completed our summer reading challenges this year.
Yeah. Yes, I did. I finished it pretty early this year.
For a change.
Didn't pick up my prizes until like the day, till the last day, but yes.
Yeah, I was a little ahead of that, but only a little.
I am really pleased with how it went this year. We had over 2,000 finishers.
Excellent.
Cattle peeps, you guys read 5,555,000 minutes this year.
Wow.
This is our period of time where we measure from June 1st to August 7th. It's kind of written into our Beanstack statistic portion of our website that collects this information. We had kids, adults, even babies and toddlers on, you know, being written from their mom or dad or caretaker, writing reviews, submitting videos, picture reviews. It was just beautiful. I love the concept of coming together as a community to read together, read alone, read in families. It was really fun. So I'm glad everybody participated. And I'm also very happy to say that even though we're still experiencing pandemic times, our participation rate this year was much better than last year by like practically 10% better. So yay.
Very cool to hear.
Excellent. When we're preparing for this podcast, we started talking about the summer and our, you know, we had reading. I don't know if we all had different reading goals or what we were looking to do for our reading, but we talked about how we all read a little differently this summer. And for some of us, we got to books that we, a few books that we really wanted to get to, maybe even some from spring. I know for myself, I changed my reading a little bit and I really focused on one part of my job as a nonfiction selector. It really fits in is seems like summer. I'm really drawn to more somewhat instructional, informational books, a little less than some of the memoir or history or that sort of thing, or science writing books that I often like. And I wanted to talk about two of those today. I really love in summer to take a big stack of books and just go through them and look at the pictures, look at magazines, that sort of thing. But two that I really, really enjoyed and wanted to bring today. The first is Vegetarian Chinese Soul Food, Deliciously Doable Ways to Cook Greens, Tofu, and Other Plant-Based Ingredients by Shou Xing Chu. And this is her second book. The first was called Chinese Soul Food. And I looked at an author interview and she said that she didn't put enough vegetarian recipes and vegan recipes in the first one. And that's why she wrote this book. And she didn't want to go vegan because she really loves eggs. So she said, so this book is gorgeous for one, just absolutely beautiful. The tones are greens, oranges, and sort of like a mustard yellow on the cover. And then throughout the book, the colors really go through some gorgeous pictures and spreads of different ingredients, different sauces, lots of Chinese vegetables, different types of cabbage and greens, and this beautiful layout. And what I really liked about it was beautiful, it was inspiring, and it also seemed accessible. Seems like something I could, sometimes I look at cookbooks just to sort of dream, but this one I dreamed and I was able to like say, okay, I think I could do this. I could make some of these. There's one like a ginger date broth and then a soup called Mian Pian Soup with, you know, very simple, looks like a nice clear broth soup. It just looks delicious. So this was something that I'm actually going to pursue some of the recipes and looking forward to that. kind of a goal this fall of maybe cooking maybe a recipe at least a week on the weekend. So it's a really fun one. Another really accessible title is that I discovered was Floratopia by Jan Johnson. And this is a second title by this author. The first one was called Gardentopia. And what I really enjoy about this particular title, again, I mentioned the accessibility, is that you can pick up this book. It literally is 110 numbered ideas. So you can flip to any page and get a very beautifully written little instructional piece about not just single varieties of plants, but about concepts. If I just open up, I thought it'd be kind of fun just to open up to anything. Number 89 is Mad for Baptisia, just a gorgeous, really tall, striking plant. Talks all about it. And also the pictures in this book are really big enough that you can feel the impact to sort of get a better sense for the plant. Sometimes garden books, the pictures are just a little too small, I found. This one is just wonderful. And it goes from plant varieties to, you know, why grow native flowers, all sorts of topics. So it's a really fun, bright, engaging book. You get a few ideas, maybe discover some new varieties in this one. So Floratopia, 110 flower garden ideas for your yard, patio, or balcony. So I really enjoyed those two and wanted to talk about them and just sort of put out that reminder that when we're thinking of reading, reading garden books, reading whatever your passion is, there most likely is a book at the public library about it. And a lot of my reading and my personal interest does tend to these sort of instructional books about, you know, animals, you name it, woodworking. We really have so much of that material still at the library. So if you have a particular passion and you haven't checked lately, just to check that out. So Jessica, what were some of the books that you wanted to bring to the table today?
Well, I'm going to go back to something you said that I just want to kind of bring back up a little bit. I love the idea that I hope we all still really enjoying grabbing a bunch of books and looking at the pictures.
Yeah.
At all ages. Because I identify with that so much.
Me too. Yeah, me too.
And especially picture books. I have yet to go and kind of grab my stack of cookbooks because that's also mostly aspirational, not necessarily things that I will cook, but I would really, I haven't done that. Maybe that's on my list of things to do.
Yes.
Before the summer ends is to do a little bit more of that. But I'll do that with sort of like, I'll do that with design books and craft books as well. So yeah, that's something I need to do.
Yes.
But we talked about, yes, I am in the group of feeling like I was sort of trying to catch up the summer, find some of the spring reads. One such that I was really thrilled that I finally got to get to was a book called A Master of Gin by P. Jelly Clark. He had come to my attention. He wrote a novella, a tour novella called The Haunting of Tramcar 015. And his books are, there's a lot going on here. They're alternate history. They're kind of pre-World War I-ish, centered in Egypt, in a world where Egypt and Northern Africa threw off British rule earlier than, or early on, by enlisting the aid of the genie. Imagine. So there is a world in which it's inhabited by the jinn of the world and other kinds of different creatures in that realm, living side by side with humans. And then these are all, at their heart, the stories are all mysteries. So The Haunting of Tramcar 15 was a short mystery featuring a couple of employees of a basically paranormal crime division, sort of. You know, they were trying to figure out why, what was haunting the car and what needed to be done about it. It's a great short story. And then Master of Gin is the first full-length novel set in this world. And it sort of, it features another character, just was a side character in the short story, or I'm sorry, was a side character in the novella, But then I find out later that there's actually a shorter story on Tor.com that features the character in The Master of Djinn. But she is like the youngest woman working in the Ministry of Alchemy, which is basically the Paranormal Crimes Division. And she is called in to investigate an incident. And it just kind of snowballs into this big, dramatic paranormal mystery. And it's just so well done. And it's such a wide range of characters, diverse characters. And he works in some really interesting social justice themes and through all of this too. It's just a neat story and a neat world to play in. I'm really looking forward to anything else he's writing, because it's just fun, really, and thoughtful for something that has so much else going on in it as well. So
yeah,
that's one I'm really happy. I mean, it came out in May, and I had grand plans to read it as an arc, but just the world didn't work that way. So I'm just really happy I got to it.
Yeah, nice.
How about you, Mari? What are you working on?
Well, last week, I finally got to a book I've been wanting to read for a long time. I think it came out in January, maybe February. It's a young adult titled The Quantum Weirdness of the Almost Kiss. And this is by Amy Noel Parks. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Parks actually is a local Michigan State University professor. She's involved with teacher education programs at MSU.
Oh,
and I got to talk to her a little bit about, you know, what her inspiration was for this book. And she had said that when she was young, you know, she was really interested in science fiction, math and science, but also loved reading romance novels. So she set out to write this story of Caleb and Evie. And these are kids who, you know, were neighbors. They grew up together and they both end up at this kind of elite STEM academy in Wisconsin. And these kids are so sharp. I mean, very emotionally smart and honest. And even though, like, I'm going to say that Caleb, the boy character, in many ways, he was kind of like the caretaker of Evie, which in the beginning really put me off a little bit. But the story really evolves and, you know, sticking with it was really worth it. There was a lot of growth for the teens. And this is basically a STEM story involving math and physics, computer coding, and a lot of romantic comedy. For me personally, I was really curious about, you know, the things that were brought up in the book, like the concept of adinkras, which I'd never heard of. It's basically a graphical type of modeling to study algebraic math problems. Schrodinger's cat. I don't know if you guys have heard of these things.
Yes.
That one I've heard of. Experiment in quantum physics that kind of, you know, you're looking at a cat that could be dead or alive and alive as a result of, you know, some event that could or could not happen to it. It's like, it was just really interesting for me because I did have to look up some of these things and I was like, whoa, is this for real? But back to the romance. There's, you know, a bit of a love triangle in the story. And a lot of funny banter. They're in a dorm setting, lots of good jokes. I feel like this could really appeal to teens who are interested in science, but also to adults too, possibly. Because I found a lot of really serious themes in the book. I mean, there's a social anxiety disorder that is touched upon, you know, parents being overly controlling. And especially something that was very interesting to me is what young women in particular who are in science, you know, have to go through sometimes just to be taken seriously and, you know, not assumed frauds, you know, when they're presenting their ideas in the STEM field, which is still predominantly, you know, controlled, or I don't want to say controlled, but mostly men who are involved in these fields.
Controlled is a good word, actually.
Yeah. And it was really a really cool read because there are also a lot of like supporting characters that I ended up really wanting to know more about. And I know that, you know, when you're writing a book, you can't go too deeply into every single character, but, you know, there was one that was interested in climate science, also considering, you know, what would it mean to reform Christianity? Just a super interesting book, and really funny too. I really liked it a lot. Amy Parks has also published a middle grade novel. It's called Summer of Brave. And that is also in our collection. She has another YA one coming out in 2022. So
very cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. Very cool. The other title I'm kind of still working through actually is by a couple of other local authors, sort of anyway. The story is called The Dock Porter, a Mackinac Island novel by Dave McVeigh and Jim Ballone. Dave McVeigh, I think, grew up in Milford, but I could be wrong. And then Jim Ballone, perhaps he grew up in Michigan, but I know he went to Wayne State, coolest university in the world. So this is a really interesting, fun story because I get to go to the UP next month and I'm really excited.
Ooh.
So I'm going to hit the big MI or Mackinac Island. It's a very nostalgic book. And, you know, I think it will really appeal to people who love up north, who love the UP, who like kind of, you know, visiting places they love in their heart, reading about them in their books. I'm not really convinced truly that it's a YA novel. I mean, it definitely has a lot of YA elements, but I think considering this year and, you know, the fact that we still get to live in Pierre, Michigan, and, you know, I know that this moment in time will pass. This was just a really fun, comforting read so far. So I like that. You know, yes, there are a lot of characters that seem to come from, you know, privilege. And I, for a while, I thought, is anyone else's story going to be reflected? But there are, you know, there are real youpers in the story. There's a showdown, there's funny romance, and of course, the Mackinac Straits. So I hope you can get a hold of that. We have a couple in our collection right now, and we are getting more soon.
Very cool.
Excellent. Sounds great. You mentioned privilege, and that kind of leads really nicely into my next pick. I think this book is going to be hard for me to beat for my best book of the year. I mean, it couldn't have been a perfect book really for me, but I think that it has more universal appeal than it might sound when I say the title. I want to start in, I actually saw a Los Angeles Times headline about this book, and this is how this was the headline. Think you know horse girls? These writers would like a word, which is perfect for this book. It's called Horse Girls, Recovering, Aspiring, and Devoted Riders Redefine, that's the key word, the iconic bond. Edited by Halima Marcus. And this was, I mean, it was just phenomenal. I gush on this podcast, but this is one of the best books I've ever read. I will keep this book forever. I was very fortunate to get an ARC, but it is releasing this month, so it will be available. This book is really that redefining is the key word there. This is a sort of an all-star cast of authors, including Carmen Maria Machado, who we've talked about, Jessica talked about on the podcast before, of course. Jane Smiley, who I have read every essay about horses, every horse book she's ever read. So a new, fresh essay from her, but also Maggie Shipstead, who has the Great Circle fiction book came out this year. And many other just exquisitely written essays. Every essay is excellent. This was a phenomenal collection. In the back, it's really nice because, like good essay collections, you can go back and read a profile about each author and see what they've read. And some are poets, some write, you know, a lot of articles, some have written novels. The author of Jello Girls, that book was a nonfiction piece a couple of years ago that was really popular, just a fantastic, really powerful essay. But these range so much. The challenge is talking about it right now on the podcast. So instead of going into each piece, because they're all so extremely different, I want to say that it's a collection that celebrates the diversity of of the authors, you know, writing the collect in the collection, and also challenges those stereotypes and notions about what a horse girl is, what we think of in our culture, often a kind of a negative, really kind of filled with a lot of negative stereotypes, but often certain racial and socioeconomic stereotypes go with what is a horse girl. And each of these authors addresses that in themselves. Am I really a horse girl? You know, can I be? What does that even mean? And all the barriers, sort of mentally and financially, to horses. But also that, you know, a lot of these authors try, you know, they had horses in their youth, and then for so many reasons, left them behind, you know, financial mainly, you know, not realistic, different reasons for leaving them behind, but then what's pulling them back as adults, or, you know, really deep memories, talks a lot about identity, a lot about thinking about privilege, thinking about what do horses give us? Why are, as women, are we drawn to them? But also there's gender diversity in this too, talking about people in history that, you know, had assumed other gender identities, you know, cowgirl kind of dynamic. So there's a lot, there's just so much in here. The history with Native Americans and with horses, and just a fantastic collection. So I recommend this to people who love horses, but also to people who love a really good, powerful, well-written essay. So yeah, this is probably one of the best books I've read this year. Really good. So Horse Girls, Recovering, Aspiring, and Devoted Riders Redefine the Iconic Bond.
You know, so, as I'm listening to you talk about this one.
Yeah.
Oh, did you want to go and talk more about?
No, I'm good.
Okay, well, so I'm listening to you talk about this and thinking about the book that I was going to talk about next.
Perfect.
Which is Broken Horses by Brandi Carlile. So if you're not familiar with Brandi Carlile, she's a Grammy-winning Americana country singer, singer-songwriter, kind of in that category. She would probably be country if country were more open. And she's trying to push her way in, which is totally fine with me. She's fabulous. She was kind of having a banner year, set of years, kind of 2018, breaking through, really breaking through with her album, By the Way I Forgive You. Won Grammys, started the supergroup High Women, produced with Shooter Jennings, Tanya Tucker's Grammy-winning song and album. And she came out of this really, really giant set of years heading into 2020 with, she wasn't writing the way she had been before. She wasn't writing songs. She was writing more prose. And it basically became this memoir. And in it, Broken Horses actually goes to her love of horses. But she is somebody who grew up dirt poor, but just loving music. She had an undiagnosed reading disability, ended up dropping out of school and just deciding that music was going to be her thing. But the interest, what your stories made me think of, and it's rethinking the identity of horsewomen or horse girls. Her early career had to be guided by, she needed enough money to keep this older horse that was with her all the way up to 2019 or 2020. I'm not sure Sovereign died in 2019 or 2020, but
wow,
you know, she needed to be able to scrounge, and it made her a grind and figure out ways to make money and come up with schemes, because she needed to have a place where she could keep that horse.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting, because that kind of storyline goes through her memoir as well, because really Sovereign lived until very recently.
Oh, wow.
But it's really an interesting look at somebody kind of on the fringes who has made it, who's kind of found a way to push her way into areas where people didn't want her. She is a lesbian. She is from the Pacific Northwest, but loves country. She was kind of odd out everywhere. And I'm really happy. It came out in March. Again, this is one of those I was finally catching up, but I kept putting it off because I really wanted to listen to the audiobook. It is a first time writer or prose writer. It's not perfect, but it's her. And again, she's working against her, as she's saying kind of from the beginning, her lack of education and her kind of getting around her disability as well. And it's just one of those things. It's like, it's an inspiring story, but the audiobook is wonderful and it's interspersed with her music as well. So it's just I would highly recommend it. She's really, if you're not familiar with her, look up The Joke or The Story. Those are her two biggest hits. But it was really moving and really interesting. And she just, for somebody who sort of was always on the outside, she has made friends in the highest places. She's met her idols and sort of just able to hang out with them and learn from them. She talks about being on a talent show stage when she was a kid, a pageant, I think, actually. And she was never, you know, a stereotypical girly girl. She wasn't, you know, she wasn't wearing dresses if she could help it. And she decided she was going to sing Honky Cat by Elton John in the show. And like her mother knew this was not going to get her a win. But she helped her come up with the costume and she got up and did the show. And, you know, fast forward, she was actually asked to interview Elton John when he put out his book because they're friends.
Wow.
It's just one of those really kind of feel good inspirational stories. And she's just a really good writer. It's songwriter. And her, if you're familiar with Brandi Carlile, it's a band, not it's her name, but it's her and a pair of twins that the Hanseroff twins, who are the group. And it's just it's a really neat book because it's a bit their story as well. And the people that they meet and work with over time.
Cool. Sounds great.
How about, you got more, Mari, right? You've got one.
I have a couple of picture books I wanted to mention. Mm-hmm. One of them I'd been waiting for a long time. It's called Be a Tree.
I love that book.
It's written by Maria Jean Ferrari, and it's illustrated by Felicita Sala, who's also the illustrator on, I think it's Joan Proctor, Dragon Doctor. Really, really cool book too there. But this book, you know, I was thinking about it earlier. I'm like, there are a lot of books out there on trees. But I never tire of reading a book, especially trees and flowers and to a certain extent, like just, you know, the nature that is outside, like, you know, birds in particular or rain and clouds. I don't know, maybe those are really simple early literacy sort of concepts, but this was such a beautiful, beautiful book. She starts out with, and I'll say that it's kind of like a poetry book in some ways. I mean, there's a lot of beautiful illustration of, you know, the trees, but it kind of puts side by side what a tree is like, how it's made, you know, all its parts, and it kind of compares it to, you know, what we as humans are like. And, you know, the tree has bark. We have, you know, our first line of defense is our skin. I mean, just, it kind of goes like that back and forth, but it starts out with like, be a tree, stand tall, stretch your branches to the sun. So I just really, really enjoyed reading through all the different comparisons of, you know, what we're like as people and just the very elaborate system that makes a tree and, you know, what goes on even underneath a tree and how trees talk to each other. Mm-hmm. That wasn't something I was super familiar with, but, you know, the weather influencing, you know, the form of communication in which trees communicate with each other, roots below the forest. And something that I had to laugh about there's this reference to a wood wide web of information.
Yes.
A wood wide yes. web of information all below, you know, the surface of where, yeah. you know, tree roots yes. are and, you know, where they're all entangling and coming together. It's just a really beautiful book. And of course, the illustration is really gorgeous too. I think at the end, I mean, like a lot of books, there's a bit of science back matter that I you know, recommend for families to read together. Really nice. And then the other book I wanted to mention, I'm not going to give too much away because it's kind of a short book, but it's called The Night Walk. It's by a French author, Marie D'Orleans. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing her name correctly, but it's basically about this family that decides to go on a walk sort of in the middle of the night. And it's just beautiful. It's just like a sense of adventure, which I can't say I've ever done anything like that with my family or my parents. I didn't do anything like that, but it's a bit of a mystery and a, I don't know, like a magical experience for the kids. And I can't tell really if the kids were expecting to be awakened by their parents to go on this walk, but they go through the forest and they go through, you know, near a lake, and they're heading somewhere, someplace that's magical and someplace that they have to get to on time. So that's all I'll say. I really, really liked it a lot. Lots of nice contrast where, you know, there's a flashlight and there's the stars and the sky. It's a really great read for summer, I think.
Yeah, it sounds like a do a little local shout out here. The Harris Nature Center in Meridian Township actually offers night walks for families like that as a program. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't know if there is the magic in nature, but yeah, it's a really unique experience because it's sort of disorienting at first and yeah. then you actually find your bearings and they request that the families turn their flashlights off and get that adjustment. You feel kind of dizzy at first, uh-huh. But right. it's really cool. And just those nature experiences. I don't think kids can really get enough of them. I mean,
or adults.
Yeah, or adults. Yeah. Right. Yep. Absolutely. That's all true. Of them. Yeah, we all need it. I had one I wanted to bring, kind of segueing from picture books. It's let's call this an adult picture book. It's almost like a comic. I wouldn't know if you'd call it a graphic novel. It's just yeah. trickier to define.
Ish.
Maybe. Yeah, ish.
Ish.
What a delight. This book is called Walking Your Octopus, a guidebook to the domesticated cephalopod by Brian Kessinger.
I love him.
Oh, it's delightful. And it's sort of, would you say sort of a steampunk style illustration?
Oh, definitely. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so it's a sort of tongue-in-cheek, really cool book too, because it's really long and skinny, just really fun format, mm-hmm. but amazing illustrations of this, you know, adopting basically a cephalopod, adopting this octopus. And all Got these, him. Yeah, and then all of these adventures that you would have in that process. And it's saying, you know, in searching for one's pet, remember there are many octopuses in the world requiring homes. You're encouraged to seek out local cephalopod rescues and shelters before contacting a breeder. And then all these adventures that you would have, each page, each spread is this gorgeous, whimsical celebration of what life would be like with this really happy, bubbly, adventuresome cephalopod. I mean, it goes on a bike, has all these adventures, what it eats. It's really loving and charming. I'm a big octopus fan, and I don't think I'm probably alone. I think octopuses are having their time right now in our society with the Octopus Teacher documentary and lots of good books about them. I think they've gone from being like sort of terrifying to almost, you know, really captivating, such intelligent, right. amazing creatures. So,
and they sort of became a mascot of steampunk society and art.
Okay. See, this I did not know.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That's sort of where Otto came from. Okay. And you can find Otto and Victoria, his artwork all over. Well, you can go to his website, which I think is briankessinger.com. But it's, you can see them kind of thrown into it. Any mashup. I've seen them dressed as Star Wars characters. I've seen them. Yeah. I mean, just the things that an octopus can do. It's quite fascinating.
That's great.
How you can fit an octopus into all these different stories is really fascinating. But he also does a lot of artwork. He has a character. It's basically little Kylo Ren. And it is the Star Wars character basically as Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes.
Oh my goodness.
And the parents, so like Han Solo and Princess Leia are drawn as his parents in Calvin and Hobbes. Kessinger has a really neat style. And Otto and Victoria, I love Otto. Just that octopus is fabulous.
It's just so pleasing and adorable and charming. Yeah, really, really fun. What a delightful book. And we didn't have a chance to talk about this last time. So I thought it was worth it.
One not to miss, definitely.
No, and it's just a pleasure. And it fits that summer reading feeling to me. Yes, you know, it's like, for me, it's sort of learning and looking and just sort of enjoying this special time of year before it leaves us.
Right.
And the cold comes.
I have one more I was going to talk about, and I felt like I was catching up, but come to find out, this one actually doesn't come out until next week.
Right.
But that's okay. Next week from our recording. So I think the 21st or something like that. But it's called The Other Me, and it's by Sarah Zachrick Jeng. And she has ties to Michigan, and this book has ties to Michigan. This is a weird, I think I would classify it as a techno thriller versus science fiction, though it's a really fine line in this one, because you don't know what's going on to begin with. Basically, the lead character, Kelly, walks through a doorway on her birthday in a gallery opening in Chicago. And once she goes to the doorway, she's at a birthday party for her at a restaurant with her family in Michigan with a husband she doesn't remember marrying. It's like she's just walked into another life, and she can't walk back through that door. As she talks to people, she kind of has vague memories of multiple timelines, and it just sort of gets worse as the evening progresses. And she just knows something has gone wrong. She doesn't know what, but her tattoos that she knows she got are missing. Wow. Her hair is longer. And she has a husband that she doesn't remember. She remembers this guy from high school, but she doesn't remember ever talking to him. And suddenly they're high school sweethearts who've been married ever since. She went to art school in Chicago and stayed there and worked on her career, but suddenly stayed home and went to Michigan State and got married. So she's just trying to figure out as the story progresses what's going on and who can possibly help. The weird thing is that she does actually decide one afternoon, this may be wrong and it may be more of a weird thing to do with the sort of feel of it, but I get the feeling that it's sort of Kalamazoo-ish. It's a fake city, but definitely Michigan, where she decides she's going to go back home to Chicago. It's close enough for her to do sort of in a day.
Yeah.
And she goes to her best friend in that Chicago life who doesn't recognize her.
Oh my goodness.
But then later calls her and said, I don't understand what's going on. I know you. I remember you. What happened?
Wow.
And so it's a really interesting mystery, suspenseful mystery, as she's trying to figure out what's going on and what possibly her husband has to do with all of it. So I don't know where I am on it, but it's stuck with me because it's an interesting story. So I just, throw it out there.
Sounds like quantum physics.
Let's just say there is something along that line as part of it.
Wow.
So I was intrigued, and the story, the idea has stuck with me. So I would suggest other people give it a try.
Yeah.
I really would like to have somebody else tell me what they think. And again, that's called The Other Me.
Excellent.
Do you have other ones to do, Mari?
Well, one that I've been waiting for a long time, and I did just get it this week, is We Are Still Here, Native American Truths Everyone Should Know. And this is from the authors and illustrators of We Are Grateful, Atsali Haliga. I'm not sure I pronounced that correctly at all. It's Tracy Sorrell and illustrated by Franny Lasak. Beautiful, beautiful book. It is a nonfiction book. And it's really, really beautiful in that it's kind of a presenting an idea for our community at large, our world at large, our United States at large, to recognize that Native history is not just Native history, it's Native present, that the Indigenous community is all around the U.S. and so many different parts of the history influence the present, but there's just so much other, so many other things going on. And I'm still getting through it. I'm not sure really if it will appeal to a lot of people, but I have really, really enjoyed reading it.
Sounds good. I have one that, or just two titles to mention that I think we all have had this problem. We talked about some of the books we got to today, but ones that you've checked out, you put on hold, you return, that sort of thing. And our listeners too, but maybe chuckling when they hear this, because they probably have the same types of problems if you're a big reader or library user. But
7-day books will get you all the time.
Which one?
Those 7-day books will get you all the time.
Oh yeah. This one, you know, had hold lists and I was on it and I returned it, so I wasn't holding people up, but I want to read this book. It is called The Madhouse at the End of the Earth by Julian Sancton. It's the Belgica's journey into the dark Antarctic night. So we've talked a little bit about my really fear of horror movies, books. I don't read it. I won't read it. But I have a fascination with Antarctica, totally, completely, and of like shipwrecks and expeditions and
uplifting stories, yeah, too.
Just terrifying. For whatever reason, that's the sort of terror that fascinates me. Is these like frozen, dark terror, and you're stuck and there's an iceberg, and I don't know, that is fascinating to me. So this has been on my list and I want to read this one by the end of the year. And it's been a bigger book this year. It looks really cool. The other one has a local connection, and this one is called Lessons from Plants by Baranda L. Montgomery. And Baranda L. Montgomery is a foundation professor of biochemistry and molecular biology and microbiology and molecular genetics at MSU, our local university here. Yeah. She's also a fellow of the American Association for the Advancement of Science and the American Academy of Microbiology. She was also named one of Cell's 100 Inspiring Black Scientists in America. And this book is one of my favorite expressions, a deep dive into plants. And it gets pretty scientific. I've picked through it a bit, but also about, you know, sort of like, what plants can teach us as humans and can teach us in our world. So very, very cool. I'm going to read this year, but it's just going to be the right time and I'm going to pick it up and then I'll bring it back to the podcast to talk about. So are there any like that for either of you today?
Yes, definitely. The top of my list that I just had to return again, and I feel horrible because I really want this book. Actually, I started with Jeannie and the Djinn, and I'm going to finish on this one. So Helen Wecker, who wrote The Golem and the Jeannie years ago, which is a fabulous book, just put out a sequel called The Hidden Palace. And I really, really want to read that book, but it is slightly on the larger side. And I haven't had the time to kind of set aside for it just yet.
Yeah.
So I had it for a while. I have returned it and I will get it back again as soon as I can when the list gets back to me. But that's the one I'm really looking forward to right now, though. I'm also, you might be able to help me, I'm blanking a little bit on the title. There is a new nonfiction title of tracing a pack that's been moved, a bag that was moved.
Family, yeah. Family. Sarah's Sack or Ash. Okay. Sarah's. Yeah, I want to read that
yes.
too.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was the other book I had to return yesterday.
Sarah's Sack. It was in our yes. LSJ books.
It's yeah. Sarah's Sack. Yes.
Sarah's Sack. Mm-hmm, definitely.
Anything else anybody wanted to throw out there?
I'm kind of looking forward to a title by Kwame Mbalia, Black Boy Joy. It's a collection yes. of yes. short stories that I'm just really excited about. And it came out this fabulous. Month, I think, but we have not yes. received it yet.
Sounds but good.
It was top of one of the charts too, and it was that mm-hmm. was so good to see.
So as usual, just so much good stuff to read.
Yes, yeah. Never enough time. So many books.
Absolutely.
All right, it's been lovely talking books. I love doing this. So I hope we gave you some great ideas, the things to go looking for, and know that we're out here. Adding stuff to the collection and trying to connect you with titles. So thank you.
All right. Everyone have a great rest of your summer.
Yeah. Happy reading.
Hey Lansing, it's Dee Dee in the morning from Stax 92.1. Join me weekday mornings from 5 to 10 for the fun and the games to start your day. Plus we're partnering with Capital Area District Libraries for Dee Dee's weekly download. Each week, listeners receive recommendations on books, music, and more that could be downloaded or streamed for free with a membership. Don't have a membership? No problem. Visit cadl.org/card to sign up for one today.